Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. Triple Play Thursday. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Coming up a little bit later on, speaking of music, we are going to be talking about the best covers versions of songs ever, and then maybe some of the worst covers ever. That'll be coming up on the show. But we want to get to our guest pretty quickly because there's a lot to talk about. Every couple of weeks, Dan Feinberg, a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, joins us and we talk TV. And I was on vacation last week, and so it's been 3 weeks since. And, you know, I'm looking at the stuff that Dan has been writing about and talking about. Dan might be on with us until Cochran comes in. So there's a lot to talk about, in other words. Dan Feinberg, you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Lots to talk about. How are you, Dan?
I'm okay. You think there's TV out there?
Yeah, that's a little. Just a little. And well, first of all, I want to talk about the event that you're back now, right?
I am very much back and have in fact been back for a week. I would say that I have depressurized somewhat.
Okay. So you were at TCA. Tell everybody what that is.
Yes, I was at the Summer Television Critics Association press tour, and as we remind you every January and July, that's the time when all of the nation's TV critics convene in a hotel, either in Pasadena or Beverly Hills, and all of the various television networks and streaming services and whatnot come and present all of the TV shows that are going to be lining up for our approval or disapproval over the next 5 to 6 months. So in this case, it was 17 days of fun in Beverly Hills.
Okay. Well, the press tour, we're going to get to that. I definitely want to cover that for sure. There's a lot to cover there. But also, speaking of the TCA, the Television Critic Association announced the 2017 TCA Award winners.
We did indeed. It was a fun show hosted by the incredibly talented Kristen Chenoweth, who sang a couple songs and did a lovely duet of a song from Wicked with Sterling K. Brown, which was a highlight.
That's awesome. That's great.
It was pretty fantastic.
That's really great. Well, let's talk about this. And how long have these awards been handed out?
I believe these were the 33rd TCA Awards.
Okay.
So many years, and if you go back through our history, we've got some great awards and we've got some embarrassing awards. I feel like this year mostly we did pretty well.
Yeah, I'm looking at it and it looks I'm looking at the winners here and it looks pretty good. Tell me about the association itself. How many members are there?
There are 200 plus members, and when it comes to awards, we usually get pretty close to 90-ish% voting, and we vote across somewhere around 12 or 13 categories, and I think we do a pretty good job in general, and I think this year we did a better than average job, I would say. I'm not sure I'm embarrassed by anything we gave awards to this year, and some years that's not the case.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Well, let's talk about that. Individual achievement in drama went to Carrie Coon, who had a pretty good year.
Indeed she did. Yes, she was she's the first TCA Award winner to win for two performances in the same year, and it's a pretty unprecedented spring that she had. And I say that even though come next year, for example, the same thing could end up happening with Elizabeth Moss for a hypothetical second season of Handmaid's Tale plus Top of the Lake.
Yeah.
It's entirely possible it could happen as soon again as next year. But this year, it was impossible to honor her for one and not the other. And so she came to the awards. She left her grandparents something very, very large anniversary, a big family gathering. She left it for 24 hours, accompanied by husband Tracy Letts.
Nice.
Just to come to our awards, nice. Which was a tremendously nice thing for her to do. She is good people. I have only good things to say about Carrie Coon.
And she deserves the award you guys gave her, for sure.
Oh,
individual perfect. Achievement in comedy, Donald Glover for Atlanta. Again, deservedly so.
Absolutely. One of the things of note here is that we generally give that the individual achievement awards to performances. They don't necessarily need to be performances, though, and we sometimes forget that, and we don't nominate, for example, showrunners all that often. And the great thing about nominating a Donald Glover in this case is that he did it all on his show, and so most surely when you include all of the individual achievements he had within that show. Very much deserving.
I want to mention very quickly, last night on Jimmy Kimmel, Zach Galifianakis was on. And Jimmy Kimmel brought out the Vegas odds on whether or not he would win the Emmy. And so he went down the list, and Donald Glover is the favorite to win, according to Vegas odds. And Zach Galifianakis was last with 1.6% chance. And so Zach Galifianakis like looks at his 1.6%. I would have rather not been nominated.
I have a very good interview with Zach that's going up in probably the next couple days. Talked to him about the Emmy nominations and whatnot, and he was very much of the I'm probably not going to win opinion, yeah. And he's probably not going to win. And you know, it is an honor in his particular case to be nominated because that's a little show that we like a lot, but not enough people know about.
Right, exactly. Okay, best achievement in news and information. Come on, OJ Made in America. I mean, that we've talked about that show a little bit. Outstanding achievement in reality programming, Leah Remini, Scientology and the Aftermath.
Indeed, and Leah Remini was there, and she gave a very impassioned speech about what that show had meant to her and what it had meant to fellow survivors of the Scientology religion, cults, whatever. I don't want to say too much because they're listening at all times. but yes, she gave a very passionate speech and was very grateful to get the award. And you know, good for her.
Did anybody ask her about how she felt about them killing off a character so she could reunite with Kevin James?
Strangely, it did not come up, largely because the GCA Awards are a non-coverage event. Otherwise, probably would have asked about the fact that, yes, they had to kill off Kevin James's wife on Kevin Can Wait to bring her back, which is just weird. And even worse, it's probably going to make me watch a couple more episodes. The biggest crime of all.
Outstanding achievement in youth programming went to Speechless.
Indeed, we have different definitions almost every year on what that category means. Some years it's something like Yo Gabba Gabba or Sesame Street or Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood, but we've also given it over the years to a number of family-friendly shows. We've given it to a number of ABC Family shows, et cetera. And Speechless was just a, you know, it's a great show that the whole family can watch together, and it was a good winner there, I think. And most of the cast other than Minnie Driver was there, and they were all very happy to be at an awards show.
Cool. Outstanding new program, This Is Us.
Who's going to argue with the most popular new show of the year?
Yeah.
And again, it put Sterling K. Brown in the audience so that he could come up and sing with Kristen Chenoweth.
Nice.
So, huzzah.
Very good. Outstanding achievement in a movie, miniseries, or special went to Big Little Lies.
It was a tough category with Big Little Lies, with Feud, with Fargo, lots of contenders, and I'm not going to quibble. I know that is a show that moved a lot of people and really touched people in specific ways that, you know, good on them, I say. And I liked it, and Reese Witherspoon was at the awards, so
nice.
Happy to have Reese Witherspoon there.
Great. Outstanding achievement in drama, please, The Handmaid's Tale.
Indeed, but also really, really competitive category. There were a number of contenders that could have won there, and good for The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah. Okay. Who accepted that?
The Bruce Miller, the showrunner, accepted it, but the entire cast was basically there, including Elizabeth Moss, Samira Wiley, Ann Dowd was there. Lots and lots of members of the cast were there, but in both of the cases, spoiler on the other award that's coming up in a couple seconds.
Right.
Bruce Miller gave the speech in both cases. I would have liked him to let Elizabeth Moss speak, but what can you do?
Okay. Outstanding achievement in comedy, Atlanta.
Indeed. Not much to say there other than good winner.
And then program of the year, Handmaid's Tale.
Indeed. I think it probably would have gone differently if the voting had been held at different times. I think there were times that This Is Us might have won. I think there were moments where that felt like the program of the year, sort of in terms of how we define it, which is not necessarily best, but program that had the largest impact. And, you know, ultimately, Handmaid's Tale, that's a show with a heck of a cultural footprint, fingerprint, however you want to put it, and very happy to have that one win. I was happy to get to co-present that award, and it was a pleasure.
Great. And then a career achievement went to Ken Burns.
Who was not there, but sent a very nice thank you speech, which came in at well under 2 minutes. I was shocked. I honestly had him figured for 20 minutes instead.
That's funny, because it's really funny, Dan, because when I read that he won, I was thinking to myself his acceptance speech was probably 3 hours long.
It wasn't. And the funny thing is we did show a clip reel beforehand. It was a 6-minute clip reel, which I just thought was great because it was a reminder of exactly how many movies Ken Burns has made in the past 25 years. It is a ridiculous number, and nobody, even the biggest fan, could not list all of the documentaries that Ken Burns has made for PBS over the years. It's remarkable.
And the Heritage Award went to one of my favorite shows ever in the history of television, Seinfeld.
Which none of the people involved were available to accept for. Jerry Seinfeld is in Australia doing a comedy tour. Larry David is Larry David, and therefore would not show up in a room full of critics attempting to give him an award. Fortunately, though, Warren Littlefield, who was the head of NBC at the time that the show was picked up and had its greatest success, was there as executive producer of both Handmaid's Tale and also Fargo, and he was able to accept, and ultimately a totally appropriate person to accept the award. So it was good that we had someone in-house to accept, and he was very gracious and said the right things. So thank you, Warren Littlefield, wherever.
All right. Well, that was fun. When was this held?
This was held on the 5th of August, I guess. And in the same room that houses the Golden Globes every year. And it's a very nice chill ceremony, usually runs somewhere in the neighborhood of an hour and 10, hour and 20 minutes. I think this one might have run closer to 90, but still, everyone's relaxed. There's no playing anyone off when they make speeches, so people can talk as long and as amusingly as they want to. And it's a good event, and we honored some good TV.
Okay, great. Dan, hang on, okay?
Of course.
All right, there you go. So we just covered the TCA 2017 award winners for the Television Critics Association. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the 17 days that he spent on the press tour. And that means that there's a lot of new shows and new things being previewed, and we'll get exclusive coverage of that. All right, that's all coming up right here on 720 WGN. We got a break right now for the news. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, Steve Cochran with the morning drive at 6. Triple Play Thursday coming up. One artist, three songs, hit your requests in right now, 312-981-7200. And we're going to be talking about the best and worst and most unusual cover versions of songs. That's coming up as well. But right now we got a lot of TV to talk about. Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, joins us every 2 weeks to talk about TV. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And let's welcome Dan back. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you much.
All right, let's talk about some of the highlights of the press tour, the TCA press tour. You wrote a lot of pieces covering it. Is there anything that stands out for you as some of the highlights of that couple of weeks?
I think there were a lot of the best panels were not panels that were for specific shows. There were a lot of kind of detail-oriented and kind of granular panels for different things within the industry that were very fascinating. There were a couple of great panels that GLAAD helped us set up, talking about LGBTQ issues on TV, and with a terrific panel about trans issues on TV and sort of representational changes on television in the past 20 years. It was just great. There were a couple great panels on directing. There was a fantastic EGA-sponsored panel about TV directing and the way that has shifted and become more and more a central part of kind of the TV conversation in a way that it hadn't been for years. And then we got a different panel about directing on the last day, which was FX-sponsored, about Ryan Murphy's HALF initiative, which was dedicated to bringing more female directors, female and minority directors, into the television world, and just a great conversation with five or six just fantastic female directors who hadn't gotten opportunities previously and have just done amazing work in just a year or two simply by virtue of someone opening a door for them and saying, here's an opportunity. And just great to see. I mean, it's just great to see that if someone takes the time to say, I'm going to set a goal, I'm going to make a concerted effort, and we're going to actually change the way things are done, that it can be done, and that it's not impossible. So when a network like CBS gets in front of us and they're like, oh, once again, we have another slate of shows fronted by white male protagonists dealing with the difficulties of being a white male, and we go, why don't you have other shows? And they say, oh, nothing else came to us. Well, sometimes you have to make the effort, and it pays off. And so it was great to see panels like that to remind you that change can be made.
Okay. That's great. And a lot of the panels, you know, they were doing, you know, they were previewing some of the shows that will be coming up. I'm looking at your day three, which is entitled Tracy Morgan's Return, Tiffany Haddish's Rise. Talk a little bit about that day.
Well, that was certainly it was. It's good to have Tiffany Haddish back on TV. You know, she did her little thing where she became a movie star over the summer.
Yes, she did.
Whatever. But you know, she's still committed to the small screen, and I appreciate that. Even if NBC canceled Carmichael's show, she has a TBS show where she's the female lead opposite Tracy Morgan in Tracy Morgan's Return to TV. It's I believe called The OG, and it. We've only seen clips from it, and we've only seen literally, in fact, one clip. There was a scene that they showed us, and that was it, and it was funny, but I don't know that I can draw any conclusions, but it was still great to see Tracy Morgan doing as well as he seems to be, and to see sort of the sincerity that he's bringing to his comeback, and Tiffany Haddish is just really funny, and she's having this moment, and certainly she has earned it every step of the way. And last press tour, she was on three different panels over the course of press tour, so she became kind of an MVP of press tour, and it was good to have her back on familiar press tour territory.
Yeah, I just think she's great, and I'm really happy for her success. I've always been a fan of hers, always. So there's a Karate Kid reunion.
There is YouTube Red is doing Cobra Kai, which is basically Billy Zabka and Ralph Macchio reprising their roles from The Karate Kid, however many years later this is. And they came out on stage amidst music, not Joey Esposito, somewhat disappointingly, but they came out a bit amidst music and amidst lights, and they had a little showdown, and they did some sort of faux sparring banter about how the crane kick was illegal and stuff like that. And I can be curious about whatever this strange thing is, because the Karate Kid is right in my 80s nostalgia wheelhouse. Sure. As with any child who grew up named Daniel in the 80s, I spent a goodly amount of time being called Daniel Son as a direct result of that movie, so I'm there for it. It was a really good panel, and we didn't get a panel for it. The panel we got was something strange, Ryan Hansen solves crimes on television or something, which features Veronica Mars star Ryan Hansen and Samira Wiley in a sort of Hollywood comedic crime-fighting thing, but the Cobra Kai intro was definitely the highlight of that particular YouTube set of panels. So okay. I'll be curious to see what it looks like.
You were talking about that FX panel before. I understand that they only teased a little bit of what the deal is with this season of American Horror Story?
Barely. I mean, I would say not even teased. I would say that other than basically making it clear that it's not literally about the election, which had been what a lot of the sort of preseason buzz was, is that it was in some way about the 2016 election and the Trump and Hillary of it all, and they kind of made it clear on the panel that it's only kind of metaphorically about the election and kind of the notion of how it kind of tribalized America or something to that effect. So yeah, that's about all I know about American Horror Story Cult, other than they are in production on it, and it has a very good cast of people who you might remember from previous American Horror Stories. And Sarah Paulson is, as always, a treasure.
And who else is in it?
Let's see. Who do we have on the panel? We had Sarah Paulson. We had Allison Pill. And they play, we did learn at least that they play a married couple with a child, or a long-term partnered couple. I'm not sure if they're married, because really no concrete details. And then lots of the other people from the general American Horror Story ensemble. It's all mysterious, and you wouldn't want to know, because then what fun would it be or something?
Yeah.
It apparently involves bees. There was some hint Ryan Murphy gave about bees.
Bees.
That was when he was hinting about what the show was going to be about before it even started. There was a hint involving bees. Don't ask me. I don't know. It's a mystery.
All of the, you know, the teases and trailers that I've seen, it's all clowns in every single trailer that I've seen.
There seems to be a clown element, and I don't know if we're going to see more or less of that as we get closer and closer to it opening, and the question of if America can reach scary clown saturation seems to be a very worthwhile concern.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you just don't want. I mean, worst case scenario, we all become desensitized to scary clowns, and we start thinking that clowns are just friendly, fun people, and you know, party entertainers, and no one pays heed anymore to the actual terror of clowns. So we'll see how it goes.
You know, the thing about American Horror Story, and you know this, Dan, the only time I've watched an entire season was the first season, and it's just not my thing, and I'm a horror fanatic. And I end up never being able to finish a season, you know. And
I am right there with you.
I'll start this one for sure because I'm always curious, and I love a lot of what Ryan Murphy does, and you know, and I like scary clowns and all that cool stuff and bees. I guess I don't know. Sarah Paulson's in it, but I mean, I'll watch it. I'll start watching it. But man, I stop watching it, and I think you and I totally agree on that.
No, Asylum was the last one I finished. This season I lasted longer. The Roanoke season I lasted longer than I lasted in the Hotel season, and I actually haven't deleted the 5 episodes that I have on my DVR, so at least there's a possibility I might watch them, but
right.
I can't imagine that.
Right, okay. But we can get back to a little bit more of what happened at the press tour, because there's a lot of stuff, but I do want to mention that you are now writing pieces about Emmy nominees. You just mentioned a little bit earlier that you've got a piece coming up about Zach Galifianakis, and you talked to him and all that stuff. I would love to talk a little bit about your piece about Pamela Adlon, who I am a massive fan of, as you know, and we're both really big fans of Better Things. I can't wait till it comes back, and I'm so thrilled she got nominated. What was it like to talk to her?
Oh, she's just so totally down to earth, and the wonderful thing about actors who take a long time to become successful is how grounded they are in success. And to say nothing of the fact that this way in which she has had this success. I mean, of course, you know, people knew her from Grease 2. They knew her from Californication. She was an Emmy-winning vocal artist. But the fact that she has had this moment of peak success on this show that is so much her DNA, and, you know, it makes her so much more appreciative of it and makes her so much more able to talk about it. And I've seen the first 3 episodes of the second season. They're just great. She directed every episode this season. Last season, she only directed 2 episodes. So this season, she just took it over. And I believe she and Louis C.K. wrote just about every episode. And, it's just great that it's the door that Louis opened with the series of kind of this one-person vision, auteurist TV, which has then been extended with Better Things, with Atlanta, with Fleabag, with a few other shows like that. It's one of my favorite trends in TV at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. And she's just great. I've always been a fan of hers. And it was funny, a few months back, I screened Say Anything at my film club. And people were like, wait, is that Pamela Adlon? as one of Lloyd's friends, and it's her. That's how long she's been around, man. That's
certainly true. And I mean, that's a movie that's just full of people in the tiniest of roles. Where you're like, oh wait, that goodness gracious.
Yeah,
but yeah,
absolutely. Okay, Dan, hang on. Okay,
Sure.
All right. Dan Feinberg is with us, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. We talk about TV all the time with him every couple of weeks. And we haven't talked to him in 3 weeks, so there's a lot to go on here. He was on the press tour, and he's seen a few pilots, and we're going to go through some of those as well. So, Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter. We'll get back to him right after we take a break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. We're talking about cover versions of songs as well. Dan Feinberg joins us. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him, and you should, on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. And Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much.
So you had a little TV critics debate about the summer with Tim Goodman.
Indeed.
And you debated Twin Peaks, Game of Thrones, which I don't watch, and you analyzed Netflix's recent stumbles. Well, does Netflix debut a show every 3 days at this point?
Well, I mean, mathematically, they're debuting basically a show every day. Some weeks they're debuting 5 or 6 shows on Friday. It's a little crazy, a little overwhelming. And I would say this summer has been a little bit more on the stumbly side than perhaps they've been doing before. But they've had successes, too. And so they don't care about the stumbles.
Yeah. Well, what do you think are some of the stumbles, Dan?
Well, I think that Gypsy was a colossal stumble.
Yeah.
The Naomi Watts psychological thriller, erotic, whatever. It was both dismal. It was dismal in a way that was really, really preventable. Like, I don't know at what point Netflix said, okay, just do whatever you want. We're not looking at scripts. We're not paying any attention to anything you're doing. We're just going to put it on the air and whatever. But it plays like Surrender. It plays like someone said, okay, well, this was the best we can do, and either someone's going to find it or they aren't. And it's a bad show. Nobody talked about it positively. And it's one of, I would say, I think it's probably their fastest cancellation ever. They've had a couple recent shows that have been canceled after one season. They canceled Girl Boss after one season, and that's, you know, a limited loss. I liked things about it, didn't like other things about
it.
Right. Whatever. They canceled The Get Down after a season, which some people were disappointed by. But this one they canceled like quickly after one season.
Yeah.
It was a huge dud. Friends from College in terms of critical reception, a huge dud. I feel like people have watched it, though, is the difference. Like, there are so many shows where Netflix puts them out and there's no ripple. I definitely felt people were talking about Friends from College.
Yeah. The last time we talked 3 weeks ago, Dan, I had just watched, I think, 3 episodes of it. I went back and watched one more. I can't finish it. I hate those people. I just hate them.
It's not necessary. It's whatever. They haven't renewed it yet. They haven't canceled it. It's kind of in limbo. I would bet that they probably renew it because of the cast.
Well, the cast is amazing, which makes it all the more disappointing.
It's very disappointing. So there's that. So those are kind of the big duds.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, you know, Glow was a huge success for them. Again, I don't know what success means because they don't give ratings. So
right.
My only sense of what success is are people in my world talking about it and are they saying nice things? And with Glow, the answer was yes.
Absolutely.
Certainly.
Absolutely. Yeah, completely. And I know, you weren't as crazy about Wet American Summer 10 years, whatever the hell it's called, 10 years later. I actually think it's very funny, and I agree with you. You know, like all of the Wet Hot American Summer stuff, it's sometimes hit or miss. But I laugh very loud and really hard during all of the Wet Hot American Summer stuff. And you can't. Again, we want to talk about casts. Good God! I mean, you know, the cast for Wet Hot American Summer is just amazing. Michael Showalter's having a pretty great year too.
He really is, and it's amazing the amount of time that he has. I don't understand how he has the time that he has, but between this, The Big Sick, executive producing and doing some direction on Search Party and its second season.
Yeah.
Definitely a good year.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I, you see, you know, Big Sick, I think is one of the best movies of the year. I just think it's a wonderful movie. So, all right. So, and let's get back to this debate. You guys debated about Twin Peaks. Who was someone pro and someone con, or were you both kind of just ugh?
Tim seems to be very negative. He hasn't written anything about it, and this is the first public outing of Tim's opinion on Twin Peaks. So it was very interesting to see. I had not known this was how he felt. But yes, Tim very much very, very negative on Twin Peaks. Me, not really negative at all, just also not insane about it. And I definitely feel as if there is a circle of my Twitter feed and Facebook feed that is insane about Twin Peaks in a way that I cannot be, just because I'm just not investing in it in a way that allows me to be crazy about it in that way. On the other hand, I watched the three episodes I missed during press tour basically yesterday and the day before, and I really like that show. I do. I enjoy watching it, and then I don't really think about it all that much later, and I know a lot of people think about it a lot.
I'm one of those people, Dan.
God bless. You know, anyone who wants to put in the effort to try figuring out all of the connections and all of the, you know, what's real, what isn't, what started what, you know, what's the inciting event that gave birth to dark evil and other weird stuff and, you know, alternate dimensions and all that. Anyone who wants to put in the effort, good on them. I'm enjoying watching it in the moment and then moving on to other things to watch.
I'm one of those people that, that's in your Twitter and Facebook feed that's crazy. I'm crazy about the show. Absolutely crazy. I look forward to it every Monday morning when I get home from work. It's like the first thing I do is watch Twin Peaks, and I love it. So let's talk a little bit about the Saturday Night Live Weekend Update Summer Edition. This is the second year they've done this, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
They've definitely done it before. I don't remember exactly when they did. They've done it. I think there was an election period where they did something comparable.
Right.
And they've done something like this before. This feels more like them kind of basically underhandedly, lobbying for Emmy attention. To me, the premiere offered me nothing that I necessarily needed that I wasn't getting from five or six other late night comedy shows.
Right.
And they badly need to find a way to update it so that it isn't just a week's worth of old Twitter jokes. It has to be fresher than that, or else it serves no purpose. On the other hand, Bill Hader's Scaramucci was worth the price of admission.
Yeah.
And Alex Moffat doing his Eric Trump with the fidget spinner was terrific.
It was hilarious. Yeah. It was, Kenan Thompson to me just kills every time he's ever does a Weekend Update thing. And I have very little patience for Leslie Jones. I think the idea is good. I like to watch, I'm going to watch it. I'm an SNL, junkie, so I'm going to watch it. But what you said about, it not being, it's only on once a week, and you've got plenty of other late night shows right now that are actually doing a terrific job handling the insanity of what's happening every single day. And it's fresher and funnier. You're absolutely right. I mean, I'll watch it because it's Weekend Update and it's SNL, and I just don't necessarily think that they're going to handle it as freshly as these other shows are handling it. Like, say, for instance, I think Seth Meyers has been knocking it out of the park lately. I really do. And his closer looks are always really smart and really funny. And so I think he's doing a great job. And obviously, Trevor Noah's been off for a little while, but, I think he's doing a great job, too. Jimmy Kimmel the other day just stepped it up, too. So I think these nightly shows, as you said, I think a lot of people are going to them for that.
There are so many good options of people who have been handling all of the ridiculousness of the real world in just ways that are more substantive than I think Colin Jost and Michael Che have any desire to do. Have you been watching the Jim Jeffrey show?
Yeah, I have.
I thought this week's take on all of the Charlottesville stuff and et cetera, I thought it was great.
I did too.
I thought this was kind of the best of what he can do.
I agree. The thing is, we talked about it before the break there, Dan, that, it's kind of a generic show. It's got his voice, which is a great voice and a funny voice. The one thing that I do like about it that's mildly different than man sitting in chair with image over left shoulder doing jokes is that he doesn't sit. He just kind of reclines and lays. Like, his body language is so lazy that I find that very endearing and great, you know? I just think that that's kind of a funny, just a little change in what is we all expect. All right, Dan, hang out, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. We got a break for the news. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiCiglio. That's me here live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5 o'clock, as we are every weekday morning. I'm your overnight dude, 2 to 5. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, followed by the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Coming up, it's Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. Speaking of music, we're going to be talking about the best, worst, most unusual cover versions of songs of all time. That's what we're doing today, so stick around. And you can check us out on Twitter, at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Like us now. My guest right now is Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. We talk every couple of weeks about TV. Lots to talk about this week, and let's bring Dan back. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you much.
All right, so we always talk about your contributions to IndieWire, and this particular question is an interesting one. Critics reveal the TV character they first identified with. So you can't really cheat on this one, right? I mean, it's a personal choice, correct?
It is true, and I didn't cheat in so far as I think I gave an answer that was somewhere along the lines of that I think I probably related to Kevin Arnold's best friend Paul from The Wonder Years on some kind of vaguely Jewish nerdy level. but the way I approached the question was more that, if I'm being perfectly honest, as a straight white male, there are dozens and dozens of TV characters that are sort of pitched at me. And so representation is a different thing when you're over-indexed on television. And so a lot of the best answers came from people who aren't, the critics who aren't over-indexed on television, who actually have needed to look across the landscape and find people who vaguely resemble them and you know, actually seeing themselves represented on TV in a powerful way. And so a lot of my colleagues had great answers to that. And my answer was when everyone on TV looks vaguely like you, not really looks like me, but is, you know, sort of demographically similar to you.
Yeah.
You're sort of splitting hairs on who's like you and who resembles you. So, you know, in my childhood, were there a lot of young Jewish characters on TV? Not so much, but I still didn't feel as if it was a wasteland for white males. And so other people had better and more personal answers.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you're right about that. I mean, straight white guys have dominated television and everything, quite frankly. So it's harder to pinpoint that. I would really have to think about which characters that I sort of identified with. I'm trying to. I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but I'd really have to sit down and think about it. But I can tell you,
it's harder when you come from a point of sort of representational privilege. It's harder to find the one person who you see yourself in. But you were going to say
the movie character that I most identify with in the history of me seeing movies, without question, closely identify with, is Miles in Sideways, is Paul Giamatti in Sideways.
But had you never until then felt like you'd seen yourself?
Well, I mean, you know, like Risky Business was sort of a life-changing film for me. I'm not a rich kid who lives on the North Shore, but I was 18, about to go to college when that film came out, when I first saw it. And I had been, you know, in high school, I saw Porky's, I saw all the TNA movies, and that's exactly what I thought Risky Business was going to be when I saw it. So it was a mind-blowing thing for me, like seeing that movie. Another kid that I identified with, this is so weird, is the kid Michael Baldwin in the movie Phantasm, the horror movie. Because I was 14 when I saw that movie, and the lead in that movie was a 14-year-old kid riding motorcycles, driving muscle cars, shooting shotguns, and killing demons. And I, at that time, he was my idol. He was the coolest kid ever. So in that regard, but Miles in Sideways, when I saw that movie, you know, I was on the verge of 40, I believe, when that movie came out. It was 39 pushing 40 when I saw it. And everything in that character, except for the fact that he stole from his mother, which I would never do, I have said or done. So it's every time I watch that movie, it's a terrifyingly accurate experience.
Huh.
Yeah. I don't know what that says about me, Dan. I really don't. But yeah. And again, it was the timing of these movies that made the impact on me. You know what I mean? Like, I got a movie here. I was 18. I was 14 for the other one. I was getting middle-aged when I was about to be 40 when I saw Sideways, and that's what that movie's about, kind of. So, yeah. Anyway, but that's an interesting question, and I want to think about the TV side of that. I really do.
No, it's a great question, and there were great answers in that poll.
All right, cool. You can check it out on IndieWire. Let's talk a little bit. I can't think of the name of the show I'm interested in. I happen to be a massive fan of Linda Lavin's. You know, obviously dating all the way back to Alice, and I even liked her. She's in that I Want to Be a Latin Lover movie for like 5 minutes, and I liked her in that. And I perked up when I saw that she's going to be in this sitcom on CBS this fall, but I hear it's not very good.
It's not very good. I mean, unless you've been really wanting to hear Linda Lavin and Elliot Gould talking randomly CBS dirty. Like if you've really like craved Elliot Gould delivering many jokes about his testicles.
Oh boy. What's the name of the show again?
If the answer is yes, by the way, by all means, the show is 9JKL,
okay.
And it's co-created by Mark Feuerstein from what do we want to say he's from for people who are going to know,
Royal Pains.
Get the doctor.
Royal
exactly.
Pains.
Royal Pains. But for me, and for many people, he and Linda Lavin co-starred in the classic short-lived sitcom Conrad Bloom, which is not a classic for anyone other than me. But, you know, there it is. So, yeah, it's a great cast, and it's really lowbrow and kind of grating, unfortunately, and... Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about some of the pilots that you've seen. I'm assuming you've seen a lot of pilots at this point.
I've seen now just about everything. I think for the fall.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of stuff for midseason. We haven't gotten anywhere near yet.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the good stuff. What do you like? Just based on the pilots. And again, you do these things called Take Me to the Pilots. These aren't necessarily full on reviews, but your impression of the pilots. So what's on the good side?
On the better than average side, I don't know that I would say anything for fall on the broadcast networks is quote unquote good. Oh. But on the better than average side, I think that CBS's remake of SWAT is probably better than it has any reason to be. And that has a lot to do with Aaron Thomas, who wrote it, and Sean Ryan, who's going to be executive producer on it. And so it has more substance than you would think a remake of SWAT would have. Now, whether it will continue to have more substance going forward or whether it'll just become like MacGyver and Hawaii 5-0, we'll see. But the pilot is above average by network pilot standards for this year. What else is above
average? What about The Mayor? I'm really curious about that one.
It's slightly above average. It's not funny, but it has a lot of potential.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, for a comedy pilot, that's what you're looking for. It's about a rapper who becomes a mayor in a small California sort of town, somewhere between a town and a city. And he's unprepared for the job, but he's got good intentions and something. But the actual premise of the show beyond that is a little unclear, but it's executive produced by David Diggs from Hamilton and Blackish. And it has potential. I would like to laugh more at it, but it could be good. What else could be good? Fox's Marvel pilot, sort of in the X-Men universe, The Gifted. I haven't written my Take Me to the Pilots entry on it yet, but
mm-hmm.
It's pretty good. It's directed by Bryan Singer, and it moves along well, and it establishes its world well. And for a pilot, that's what I want a pilot to do. So I would watch a second episode of that happily. And so there aren't that many shows that I would say that about.
Okay.
This fall.
All right. It's looking a little grim then.
It is definitely looking a little grim, but we're not going to stop. We have to talk about Big Brother.
Oh yeah.
Talk about Big Brother.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I watched last night's episode and everything.
I have to make sure that we do not ignore Big Brother.
Okay.
Because among the things I'm caught up on, admittedly, I didn't watch for 7 episodes, but the great thing about this season is I don't really feel like there's anything complicated happening.
No, you can pretty much see what's happened. There's been a couple of strange things happening. Kevin, the guy from Boston, is stirring things up a little bit. And Christmas, are you all caught up, Dan?
I am all caught up. I skipped 7 episodes, so I skipped 2.5 weeks for press tour, and I just deleted them. I decided it didn't matter. I don't care how Ramses was sent home. It couldn't possibly have been interesting.
Right.
Could it have been? Okay.
Not really. No, not really.
I didn't think so.
it was shocking to the room, you know, to the house guests, because that's when the whole, the Paul underhandedly made everybody vote for them, and it was completely shocking. It was mostly shocking to Mark and Elena. They were like, huh? Because they had no idea. Paul left them out of the loop in that little regard. But everything else has pretty much fallen into place. And, the tomorrow night, or tonight, I should say, tonight is the double eviction. That's always a lot of fun. And I think they're finally going to get Cody out. But I will say this, Dan. Josh, who we both found excruciating, and I still find him reasonably excruciating, has not been nearly as annoying, has been pretty passive for the past bunch of episodes.
Last week, getting Jessica out, he was pretty obnoxious.
Yeah, he was. But, like, basically, he's just this guy that they're keeping around, like, because Paul is basically running the house, essentially. And Josh is the guy that they can just completely manipulate to do anything. And so that's why they're keeping him in. There's no way he's going to win the $500,000. But that's why they're keeping him around, because they can use this guy to do their bidding. So
he is.
I'm having a great time watching this season. I really am. I think it's been a really fun, great season. And
I'm not sure. And the fact that I was able to skip 7 weeks without any loss of coherence says something about how not complicated this season has been. Like, I just didn't feel like I missed anything, and I don't care about Ramses being gone. So,
all right,
just move on from there.
Right. I think we can safely assume that Cody's going to be gone tonight. I would imagine Cody will be gone, and I think because it's double elimination, Elena will be next. That's my prediction.
We'll see. I mean, these double elimination, the two, the full week in one episode thing, that can really screw things up.
Yeah.
So, like if, for example, someone had the gumption to say, let's get rid of Paul this week.
Yeah.
That's how and when you do it. Yeah. So we'll see.
Always a fun episode, though. Before we let you go, I'm glad that you tweeted this. Elizabeth Moss is great. Just watched 2 episodes of Top of the Lake, and I felt like stating the obvious. I just wanted to make sure people heard that. That's all.
It is a true thing, and I've only seen 2 episodes of the new season.
I can't wait.
She's great in it.
I can't wait. I love her so much. She's so great. All right, Dan, always a pleasure. It was great to catch up with you, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Sounds good, man.
All right, see you later. Dan Feinberg, everybody. He's great. TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, great writer, funny guy, and smart, and great to have on the show. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. All right, we'll take a break. We come back. We're going to talk about cover versions of songs right here on 720 WGN.